Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. This is a podcast that I couldn't wait to get home from Florida to do. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Beth, who is a wife, mother, and a registered nurse who is going to school to be a nurse practitioner, and she's going to be studying functional medicine once she gets her NP. She also has a degree in psychology. She will tell you her amazing story from being one of the most debilitated survivors of psychiatric drugs in the benzo communities that many thought she would never heal. But she did heal. Her story will encourage anyone who is sick and feels that they can't get better. Never, ever give up the hope of recovering. And don't forget to stay tuned after the show for our post-show conversation. Thank you. Hi, Beth. I want to thank you so much for coming on because I know you have a hectic schedule and we really want to get your full story out there. So I want to have you start by telling us what's going on in your life. Are you healthy today and what your hectic schedule is like first?
So I am very healthy. I'd say that I am 100% healed from psychotropic drugs. I worked full time as a nurse. The little baby that had to endure not having a mom has a full time mom. I'm currently in nurse practitioner school. I have less than a year left. I'm going to use that degree to go into functional medicine. So I'm very busy, but very, very healthy.
Very good. So let's get into what led you to being prescribed these drugs in the first place?
So I think I was around 21 and had a near-death experience. So I had some anxiety related to that. So that started my psychotropic drug history. Little did I know, though, that what I was experiencing coming on and off was actually damage to my brain and also withdrawal. So in my junior year of nursing school, it was my senior year of nursing school. I went to the doctor because I started having anxiety attacks related to coming off of benzos. So that started my whole trip through the inpatient, outpatient psych and psychiatric, no better word than torture. So to reiterate, it was basically, you know, for several years on and off psych drugs, not realizing the damage that they were occurring. And then when I was given a benzodiazepine to kind of mask those symptoms and take as needed, I started to go through drug withdrawal. And not knowing that it was drug withdrawal, I went to the doctor and got put on a merry-go-round.
And during this time, did you see many doctors and nobody is recognizing what you're going through?
I saw many doctors. If I had to guess, probably upwards of 20 doctors. I had put myself inpatient psych. I had never been an inpatient psych or even had a psychiatric diagnosis up to this point. And I had put myself into a psych ward 14 times in 14 months. And those are just the times that they would admit me. That's not the amount of times I went to the ER begging for help. Right. I saw inpatient psych, outpatient psych. I went to a psychiatric rehabilitation center for 30 days. Nobody recognized what was happening to me.
It's really a shame. And during this time, you're in nursing school. Mm-hmm. You also have a degree in psychology. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're not intelligent. You're speaking to them and no one will even think that it's the drugs during this time.
No. And when I started to kind of try to, maybe I started to put the pieces together a little bit, I was shot right down. I remember looking at a nurse when she was talking about, she was educating us inpatient about benzo withdrawal. And I said, do you think that that may be what I'm going through? I've only been off of benzos for 3 months and I was on close to 3 milligrams a day and I was taken off cold turkey. And she said, oh no. That wouldn't have never lasted that long. It was just very gaslighted and disregarded.
Yeah. Yeah. Awful. And so at what point do you realize that you really are drug ill and you got to walk away from the doctors? And do you walk away from the doctors? What happens there?
So initially, so the last time that I went to the ER in horrific withdrawal with probably 100 symptoms at that point, I found out I was pregnant with my son. And when that happened, I walked away from psychiatry, so I thought. So long story short, that did not stop my I had put the pieces together that it was the drugs at that point. That moment, I don't know if it was God or what, but something said, you can't take any more drugs. But that did not stop psychiatry. I ended up in a facility in a different state for a little while. They did not give me any medication at that point, but that's when the drug withdrawal hit really hard while I was there. They diagnosed me with every psychiatric drug, or I'm sorry, every psychiatric thing out there, from dissociative identity disorder to bipolar, like just throwing labels at me. And when I left that facility, that was the end. I was done with psychiatry forever. And I thought, you know, I'm either going to die in my own home, or by their hands. So I'd rather die at home.
And are you on, are you cold turkeyed at that point? Because
yes, I was completely cold turkeyed of everything at that point while pregnant.
Okay. And what were you cold turkeyed off of?
I was on a merry-go-round of drugs. So there was probably over 20 drugs in a 14-month period. But the most impactful things were SSRIs and 3 milligrams of Xanax a day.
Wow. Okay. And now you're cold turkey, you go home, you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I just want people to understand some of the symptoms that you had. Because when you and I talked previously, I was getting anxious listening to all that you went through. And I know this is emotional for you to do that. And I really, really appreciate it. So can you tell us some of the symptoms? Because I want people who think, well, I have that and I'm never going to get better. What did you feel?
So let's start off by losing probably 70 pounds. I was on the chubbier side prior to that. I went down to 125 pounds. I was nothing but a bone. I had complete inability to sleep. There was not any sleep. And if I did, you know, your body eventually has to pass out. If I did do that, it was for micro sleeps at 20 minute increments. I could see through my eyelids, flashers. The noises in my head, I at one point thought I had to have been schizophrenic. I could hear all sorts of voices in my head. They felt like they were coming from the outside, from the inside. Every brain symptom you can imagine, from vibrating brain, electric brain, feeling like my brain was being thrown down an elevator shaft, shaking brain, feeling like my brain was melting. Those are just the ones that I can think of off the top of my head for the brains. And then there was the excruciating burning over the entire, all of my body, inside and out. Felt like my blood was boiling, my skin was on fire. And this isn't like, I couldn't find anybody to relate to, because these people would be like, yeah, it feels like somebody singed my hair. No, it literally felt like someone doused me in acid. My brain was on fire. My spine was on fire, vibrating, monoclonic jerks, in the beginning, seizures. Itching. My organs itched. It felt like fiberglass all over my body, inside my body. My tongue burned. My tongue vibrated. I made involuntary noises. I had really bad psychological symptoms where I had major impulse, like lack of impulse control. I would scream and beg my husband once the child was born to not let me alone with him, because these aren't things that happen postpartum. These went on from the drug withdrawal on. So, you know, when my husband's family would say, oh, it's postpartum, I'm like, there's no chance in heck, you know, because it was going on for so long. I'm trying to think about it. I couldn't sit down. I had severe akathisia. Electricity through my entire body. My legs felt like somebody hooked them to an electrical cord, and like they literally had their own motions, like bicycling. Mm-hmm. I felt pressure, like a pressure I've never felt before, like excruciating, like trash compactor pressure, like somebody was just crushing me in the trash compactor. Rage. I could feel the rage through every part of my body, in my chest. If I would explain to my husband, my dear sweet husband, it feels like I am the Hulk. It feels like I know down deep I'm not, but my body is saying that I'm the Hulk. There was so much adrenaline. I mean, I would pull my hair out. I would bite myself to try to relieve some of it. I would pace all day and all night. I would cry. And this did not go on for the 6 months that people said it would go on. They said, just hold on. It's going to start getting better in 6 months. In fact, it got way worse at 6 months for me.
And you're pregnant and you still, wow.
Yes. I gave birth with no anesthesia. I mean, my husband says that I am a saint, just for that, but he wasn't in my body and understood all of the other things that were going on. Mm-hmm. But something deep inside me said, you will have this baby and you will be his mom. And there, and you know, people have a hard time understanding, well, how did you keep that pregnancy? My mother instinct kicked in and I didn't have a choice. There was no choice. I chose him. And I was either going to die with him or we were going to live together. It was, it was not going to be a choice for me.
So with all the symptoms, I am here listening to it. It is hard to hear it. Were you able to eat while you were going through this? Because we know a lot of us can't.
Very little. So everything, everything affected me, Geraldine, everything from water. It's so odd. It sounds crazy, but like I could feel the water when I would drink it. I could feel it running through my veins. I could have no sweets. I could have no avocado. I could not have, I mean, it was slim pickings. And so, you know, there's a lot of people in the psychotropic drug withdrawal community that say, oh, you have to follow this special diet. I don't agree with that. And I'll tell you why. I ate what I had to do to survive. I lived on, when I was pregnant, I lived on the opposite of what they tell you you should be eating. I lived on bologna and hot dogs.
Yeah.
It was literally the only thing I could hold down. Everything else triggered me so bad. The symptoms would come on so severe. And I'm talking physical and mental. It wasn't something I possibly could have ever made up in my head.
Right.
I was tiny. When I gave birth to my son, I had only gained 10 pounds. And he was 7.8 pounds. Wow. 7 pounds, not 8 ounces. So, and then there's a placenta. So I gained nothing.
Yeah.
Now, one thing when we were sensitive to everything.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because as much as we think diet is important, and of course, none of us ever want to get sick again. So to take care of your health is important. But I think when you're sick, whatever you got to get in, you get in. There were days I had like 2 mouthfuls of banana and maybe a mouthful of guacamole. Mm-hmm. I couldn't eat. I was so sick. So no. I agree. I agree with you there. People shouldn't be pressured that they have to eat, right?
No. And you know, that's a long-term goal. Like what the way that I feel about it is I do eat healthy now. I do things now, but those are goals for me to maintain health now. Yes. They weren't going to decide whether I lived or died through psychotropic drug withdrawal.
Right.
I did what I had to do to survive and I'm here and I didn't change anything.
Yeah. Now, 2 things I want to mention. So one was while you were in the hospital, an Indian doctor suggested you do ECT and thank God your husband said no way. And that's when you left the hospital just to show what would have happened down the road, more drugs, ECT. Mm-hmm. But the other thing you told me the story when you went to, was it the neurologist? Mm-hmm. And I mean, here you are, you're very well educated. You tell them all the symptoms. Tell us what happened because I find that just so disgusting how you were treated.
So he was actually the final doctor that I saw. So yeah. I had already given up on psychiatry. So I waited several months to get in to see a top neurologist in the state that I live in. And I finally go, my uncle drives me there. I don't drive at that point. So he drives me there. We get there. I'm so desperate to see him. I walk in, he says, he's with a nurse practitioner. Ironically that I'm going to be one, but he's standing there with her. He says, I reviewed your chart. And all I can say is this is all psychosomatic. You're basically a nutcase. Him and his nurse practitioner sat there and made fun of me, gaslighted me, told me that I needed to be put in a permanent psychiatric facility for the rest of my life. Put his hand on my shoulder. I'll never forget it. And said, don't commit suicide.
Yeah. I mean,
and walked out the door. Yeah. Not before he prescribed me psychotropic drugs.
Right. I saw that he gave you Tegretol.
Yes,
Tegretol. I had a similar situation where my brother took me to a doctor. I'm still trying to figure out what's wrong with me. And he's saying, oh, no, it was out of your system, brought me out into the room where everybody was sitting, handed me a 5-week free supply of Paxil and said, go buy yourself a red car and you'll be fine. I mean,
disgusting.
Unbelievable. So now you're having the baby. Mm-hmm. You do what you had to do to get through. You have the baby. And what happens at this point?
So things were, you know, I was already a 10 out of 10. So with childbirth, I became a 20 out of 10, you know, because my nervous system was already shot. I had no good chemicals. It was all glutamate. There was no all excitatory neuroreceptors. I had nothing at all. So he was just shy of 3. when I started to get better. So I was very, very sick for almost 4 years, unfortunately. I mean, I don't want to scare people. My situation was very bad, but it took me until just shy of 4 years to see a dramatic improvement. Now, when I say that 3 years were acute, severe acute. Another year was subacute, where I was still not living life at all, but I did see some really bad symptoms start to dissipate. And then all of a sudden, rapidly and swiftly, things started to disappear. And one day I realized things didn't come back. And now I'm looking at, I'm going on almost 10 years, which is shocking.
Wow. Now,
thinking about that gives me chills up my spine.
Yeah. At one point, I want people to know this, if it's okay, that at one point, 3 years from your last drug, you had breast cancer.
Yes.
Yeah. Because we know others that have had their implants out and they, you know, they got very sick. How did all that go?
So I was desperate during the drug withdrawal to try to figure out, is there anything that I can do to assist my body in getting better? I knew that 100% was the drugs, but what else was holding my immune system back or my nervous system back that could potentially help me? So I started saving money I started researching breast implant illness, and I started saving money to get my implants out. And I was not able to get those out because I needed a doctor that was willing to do it the way it's supposed to be done in order to prevent me from continuing to be sick even without the implants. So long story short, I found breast cancer in the shower one morning. There was no doubt in my mind as a nurse that it was breast cancer. So I went and was gaslighted more even in the breast cancer world about the breast cancer. And unfortunately, I had to undergo 3 surgeries, which I know is very terrifying for people going through a psychotropic drug withdrawal.
Right. You're still sick when you do that, though,
yes,
right?
I am still sick.
So
yes.
Were you careful with what they gave you for anesthesia?
I was. So yeah. I had a doctor, I'm not going to say where I went, but I had a doctor do genetic testing, extensive genetic testing on me. Mm-hmm. Why he took pity on me, I don't know. He realized that I have a ton of genetic mutations that do not allow me to metabolize many, many drugs. Mm-hmm. So they were very, very careful in what they gave me. They did not give me any pre-medication. They did not give me any benzos. But unfortunately, they did give me, propofol.
Okay.
Yes. So they gave me propofol and they gave me a paralytic. It did make me worse afterwards for a short time. It did make me, my baseline changed. But it did not last long. It lasted for about 3 weeks. And then I was back to where it's the normal suffering, if that makes sense.
No, I had propofol. Some that are also very sensitive like us, propofol, they did have it. One said for 3 weeks, she didn't feel good. When I did it, it was like 2 weeks. I was foggy headed. So last time I did a colonoscopy, I did it with nothing. I'm like, nope, just do it. Yeah. And I was fine after. So
I had that first injury and I had both my breast implants out. They thought they had gotten all of the cancer. They had done a breast lift. I was in surgery for 10 hours. And then the second, they called me about 3 weeks later and said, unfortunately, we don't think we got all the cancer. We're recommending that you have your breast off. So I did do that. I have major regrets about doing that. I was not in the state of mind to make medical decisions for myself considering.
Right.
But I went ahead and did that. So and then they called me again. This is why I want to be the nurse practitioner and not follow the doctors, because they called me and said, hey, you know, we did get it all the first time. We're sorry you lost your boob. But just think, you don't have to worry about it now, which was a total lie, because a year later I found it in my armpit. One lymph node. Now it's been 5 years. Okay. And so everything's going well. I did choose to, refuse other treatments because of what had happened to me. I knew that I was still very much in drug withdrawal. So I knew that if I were to take chemotherapy and all of those things, that I was for sure a goner. Right. With chemo comes benzos and pre-meds and everything else that goes with it. And I don't think that we always think about those things, and it's a personal choice. but I chose not to do that.
Right.
And here I am. So yes, right. I've been through it, girlfriend.
Yeah. So one of the things I want to ask, because when I asked you this question, when we talked, you're like, oh, you knew to ask that question. Because I asked you, what about your thyroid? Because so many have thyroid issues and they're so sick. So to explain what happened with your thyroid.
So during the whole process, I had my thyroid checked several times. I had antibody testing done, you know, to check for Hashimoto's, all of those things, including an A1A, ANA, which is for like lupus and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. All of those numbers came back astronomically high. So although my thyroid was, the thyroid number was normal, like I wasn't hyper or hypo, mm-hmm. My antibodies were ridiculously high to the point where they said, well, you're going to end up hyper or hypo because your antibodies are going to kill your thyroid. And then the ANA, they said, just be prepared to probably be diagnosed with lupus or rheumatoid arthritis or something like that. Right. After withdrawing, after I got my head clear and, you know, was 100% healed, I had those retested and they're all normal.
And so you never had to take anything.
Nothing.
As your body settled. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. So now I'd like to get into what you did to get better.
Okay.
Because, you know, there was a little bit of intervention. Mm-hmm. I had intervention. Some of us have had the intervention. I mean, I was 5 years before I got better. I'm always honest about that.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So you ended up finding a doctor, mm-hmm. a functional medicine doctor. So why don't you tell us, you know, about that?
So I still see a functional medicine doctor. He's an MD. He has a nurse practitioner that works with him. They're very familiar with psychotropic drug withdrawal. They do a lot of functional things to help the body. They have to start out obviously very slowly. So they start out with like a test to see your real allergies versus your psychotropic allergies, if that makes sense. Like mm-hmm. what you're reacting to during drug withdrawal is not what you're really allergic to. They started with that.
What type of test? I mean, is that like the Oats test or some other type of test?
They do an Oats test, but this was more like they take your stool, they take hair samples, they take saliva samples, those mm-hmm. kind of things.
Okay.
And then he started me off on what is called modified citrus pectin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's backtrack. So what he initially did was said, before I do anything with you, nothing's going to help if you don't get the mercury out of your mouth. So we started with that. Now you have to remember, I'm in drug withdrawal and breast cancer. So the mercury fillings were more for the breast cancer, but
right.
he started getting, and we got those all out. I saw a holistic dentist, had all of those removed. And then he started working on like small supplements that do not cause any adverse reactions. And one of those is called modified citrus pectin. I take that twice a day, 6 capsules. I didn't see any significant help from it for several months. Obviously, we know why.
Was it 6 capsules?
I started 6 capsules twice a day.
Oh, 6?
12 capsules a day.
Okay.
Now I'm on a maintenance dose, which is 6 capsules a day.
Okay. And does it matter the morning with a near food?
He told me 6 in the morning, 6 in the evening, and on an empty stomach.
Okay.
Because it can pull the nutrients out of your food. However, the modified citrus pectin, it's literally the pith of grapefruit and oranges and those kind of things in a very concentrated level. Then he also started me on spirulina and chlorella, which mm-hmm. are also to purify the blood. I do believe that helped me, is one of the supplements that helped me the most. And again, it's just like seaweed. It's not something that's chemically made. It helps with like radiation. It helps with purifying the blood, helps with leukemia. It helps with prevention of cancers. It helps pull out toxins out of the blood so that you urinate them out.
Did you do liquid chlorella? Or did
I do not. I do capsules. I tried the liquid and did not like it.
Yeah. And how many of those do you do? Because some people do the liquid and do like a couple of tablespoons a day.
No, you know. I take about 6 capsules a day. Not capsules, but tabs a day.
Yep. And same with the spirulina?
Yeah, I got a combo, spirulina and chlorella together.
Oh, okay.
And you can actually find it on Amazon, the organic form in capsules. And it's about $28, but it lasts about 6 months.
Right. And then your vitamin D, when we spoke, your vitamin D was really bad. And I think a lot of people were in the house.
So it was like an 18 or 19.
Oh, yeah.
So it was very, very low. And I know that people were terrified to take it. And obviously I was too. But
did you do
liquid?
Liquid or pill? I do a liquid so I can control it.
A liquid pill.
Okay. Oh, like okay. A liquid caps. Oh, a liquid gel. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm pretty particular about which one I take. I take one, it's lanolin, not chemically modified. So that's why it's liquid, because it's lanolin.
Right. Okay. Any particular brands you want to mention? Again, we don't tell anybody they have to go do something, but if somebody wants to know,
I take several. I would just research and make sure that you're taking one that does not have a lot of additives. It's, you know, they even have one that's organic and it's made out of coconut oil. Mm-hmm. I have like five, and like I'll pick the one that's the least expensive at that moment. But I also know that they're like the best ones. I don't buy medications that are chemically processed.
Yeah. I only buy professional brands, you know, myself. Yes. I wouldn't touch anything in a regular store.
Exactly.
I'm very cautious, even after all these years. If somebody mentions something, I'm very cautious.
Mm-hmm. You have to be.
All right.
I jumped in. I don't know how I did it, but I jumped in and started taking 5,000 a day. And I remember saying to my husband after like 2 weeks, my brain feels like there's this warm, fluffy cloud over it. I couldn't explain it, but it felt good. Mm-hmm. And so I kept taking it. And, you know, early on in withdrawal, I would have never been able to do that.
Right. And that's what we try to remind people. You might not be able to do something at one point, but you can later. So you started with 5,000 of the vitamin D3 mm-hmm. with K2. And then did you up it to the 10,000 eventually?
I take 10,000 now because I feel my functional medicine doctor and my oncologist both say that people should be between 65 and 70. Versus the Western medicine says as long as your vitamin D is a 30, that you're good. And that's not the case. Vitamin D is a driving force for cancer. It is the driving force for so many hormone processes in your body.
Yeah.
So you need an optimal high level, especially if you have any family history of cancer. So I take it and I'm doing fine on it.
Right. Good. All right. So now I'm going to just... going to hit you with some questions. So we'll just like do them quick. So did you feel like you lost your identity, you know, stuff that made you, you know?
Oh, yes. I said that over and over again, not only the inability to feel anything, but mm-hmm. terror and anxiety and angst and anguish, but like I literally was plucked out of the world and thrown in my house.
Yeah.
And the world went on without me. And nobody understood my suffering. And to this day, they still don't get it.
Well, that's my second question. How did your family and friends, how did they handle it? How did they treat you? Because some of us are treated very well. Some are not.
See, I think as severe as I was, I lost all friends. I lost all contact. I couldn't be. How are you going to deal with me? I'm like something off a horror movie.
Right.
All day and all night. There's no break. My husband, he's a saint. He stayed through the entire thing, although there were many times when he said, when's the better, you know?
Right.
I said, and I couldn't give him an answer for that.
Right.
And then, you know, but he stayed. He fulfilled his duties. He kept a roof over my head so I could get better.
Right.
My mom, God rest her soul, she died. She stayed on the phone with me 8 to 10 hours a day. She would become very frustrated and say, it's time to get Valium. It's time to get a medication. You need to cease. But that's because she felt helpless.
Right.
Everybody else disappeared. My best friend since 9th grade, I've never spoke to her since.
Oh, I was just going to ask you so nothing's rekindled.
Nothing.
Do you want to rekindle at some point?
Okay. No.
And that's, you know what? When we needed our friends and family the most, they weren't there, some of them. So I can understand that.
My sister-in-law, I will never forget this as long as I live. And I hope that this rings with other people and they can understand. She's on benzos. She's been on benzos for as long as I've known her, plus some. So over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And she's highly addicted to benzodiazepines. And she said to me one day when I was only 2 years off and I forced myself to go 2 blocks down the street to my in-laws' house for Thanksgiving because my little baby, it was his first Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And I had to leave. I wasn't there very long. I couldn't sit. I had, you know, akathisia and electricity and burning and vibrating and everything else. And she said, oh, there we go again. I think she's in withdrawal for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah.
Just making fun of me.
Right. Right. So, believe me, I understand that. Insomnia, which so many want to take something else. They want to harm themselves. So how long did you have the insomnia? Like at your worst?
At the worst, it was 2.5 years.
Wow. No sleep. Just little micro sleeps or
micro sleeps only. And when I say that, I mean that there wasn't any, you know, I would get on these groups and people would say, I'm just so tired. There wasn't any tired. I felt like somebody shot me with crystal meth.
Yeah.
There was no sleep. There was no feeling tired. There was no relaxation. I don't know how my organs didn't give out.
Right. Right. Oh my gosh. How's the trauma from it all? Like I'm all these years off and I'm still so involved in legislation, all this. And when I hear stories, it breaks my heart. So I have to say, I still have the trauma from it. What about you?
So I only have the trauma if I'm involved, just like you said. Right. So I am helping 2 people right now that are as sick as I was and have found me. I am willing to work with them because they are as sick as I was, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because I know that there isn't anybody to help them. But every time they write me, it's triggering to me because I know I don't have the right words. I don't know how to tell you that it could be 6 days or 6 years.
Yeah, I know. And we can't answer the main question.
I can't answer that question.
Right. Yeah, I know.
So that's the only time. Other than that, I live my life. I live my best life.
Yeah.
Like I told you in the beginning, I'm working full time. I'm a full time mom. I to a crazy boy and, you know, full-time wife and go to church and go to sporting events. And I have no triggers really anymore.
Okay.
But I'd say for the first year, I still felt like I had 1 foot in and 1 foot out.
The first year once you recovered.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as you start to live your life, it's kind of like, you know, bad labor, you know, you kind of forget as the years go by.
Yep.
There were a couple other questions here, you know, and one was, you know, how do you put it all behind you? Did you need therapy? Cause some people do have counselors, but it seems
try therapy I was in it. I learned quickly they couldn't help me.
Right.
Not me. They may be able to help somebody else or maybe somebody in a lighter withdrawal or whatever. They could not, they were clueless on how to help me. Some told me it was my inner child. Some told me it was my husband. They couldn't help.
Yeah. So you had a strong faith in God that helped you get through it.
Yes.
I mean, any guilt. I mean, I know my kids were young. I got drugged when literally when, you know, they're babies and very little. And you just try to be the best mom that you can be. You're faking it as much as you can. Any guilt? Because I feel like I didn't do everything I would have liked to have done, but how was your guilt level there?
So I'm crying. So I apologize. Yeah. Yeah. So that is the one trigger for me. That's really bad.
That's still hard for me. Yep.
I had my son's first of everything stolen from me.
Yeah.
It was completely stolen. I'll never get that time back. And he was the only child I was able to have.
Right.
And so not that it would have made up for anything if I would have had 5 more, but just the fact that I wasn't present for his first walking, I would just scream like, I can't be your mother.
Right.
And so I make up for it tenfold now. We do everything. I'm at every sporting event. I'm the one screaming on the sidelines. We do all sorts of family things together. Like, I don't think he remembers any of that. And he is the most affectionate, loving human being you would ever meet. And I think that comes from the hours that I would hold him and walk, because that's all I could do. Wow. So he felt that love that I couldn't feel.
Right. Right.
So, yeah.
And in a way, this is the one thing with the suffering, is that what I went through, I now, you know, could protect them from being given anything. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, we've learned, I mean, look at you, you're going to school to be a nurse practitioner, you'll go into functional medicine.
Yep.
You know, it's like saves our family.
Yep.
Now, what about any, because when you weren't functioning, I mean, and people have asked me this before, when I wasn't functioning, I did stay in touch with my friends via the phone. I was a very good friend over the phone. So they didn't leave me, but I know others, they've left them. And some are, if you say, hey, I'm in a cookout, can I talk to you later? They're very jealous that you're having a life now.
Yeah.
How do you
encounter that? So I do have friends that are still, sadly, I do have friends that are still in this. So there was somebody, I won't mention her name, but there was somebody that I became very close with early on. And unfortunately, she's had a lot of traumatic things happen, and she's not able to been able to pull out of this yet.
Right.
She will. I have faith, but she hasn't yet.
Right. Until they see it. Yeah. Until they see it, they think it won't happen for them. And that's why I wanted your story, Beth, because if you could heal, then if they think they're the worst, you know, when you hear your symptoms, they have to know. You just don't give up that hope.
No,
I think you
not.
Had a strong faith in God, as many of us had to lean on God. You know, it's like, why did God do this? He didn't do it to us.
And, you know, I could sit here and be very angry that he didn't let me be healed in a year or 2 years or whatever. But I'll tell you what, and I know I would have never said this back then, but I developed I'm a better person. Like, I changed so much through that, as bad as it was. And I would never want to experience it again.
Right.
I'm just like, I appreciate the little things in life, putting my feet in the grass out in my yard and feeling it, you know?
Right. And then what about the relationship with your husband? So a lot of people say to me, well, your family was supportive. Yes. You know, like your husband, they kept the roof over our head. And then
that's
you
all
know,
he did though.
Yeah. Yeah. But then the anger, you know, and you get angry at them too, but then thank God we got through it. So how, I know a lot of people would say, well, how is your relationship now? Cause I know you bought a beautiful RV and you're going to go have some fun. So you got through that also.
Yeah. So, you know, my husband, like I said earlier, he held true to his vows. You know, it was for better, for worse, for sickness and health, till death do us part. So he stayed. He never cheated. He didn't do it. He took care of our son. He did all the things he needed to do. And once I was healing and was able to feel again, I realized the impact that had on him. I would have been homeless.
Yeah.
And it actually drove me to love him more. And we've built like an unbreakable marriage at this point. I will always choose him. He will always choose me. And I'm very grateful for that. But when I say there was support, he wasn't there to hold me and say, like, this is going to end.
Right.
He was paying the bills and keeping roof over my head and taking care of our child.
Yeah. Same.
But
here.
It actually, it caused him panic disorder.
Wow.
It caused him a lot of issue. Now he doesn't have those now, but while I was going through it,
right.
It caused him, because he couldn't fix it.
Right.
But I am grateful that I have him and that our marriage is a firm foundation again.
Good. So we want people to just, you know, hang on to that relationship.
Yes.
Let them listen to this. You know, you're going to get through it. Now, what about any of the doctors that you saw? Have you ever had a desire to go back and say, take a look at me. It was the drugs.
Or there's just one. The rest of them, excuse my language, can pee off.
Yeah.
There's just one. And it was the one that I saw for the 30 days in the inpatient rehab. The one that I saw in the inpatient rehab for the 30-day stay in another state, I would like to go back. I remember leaving there. My husband signed me out. They wanted me to stay longer. I had really good insurance, and they wanted to keep me. It was residential. And I remember her saying, send me a picture of your little boy. And I would just love to go back to her with all of the diagnosis that she gave me and say, which one of these fit now?
Right.
He wouldn't listen to me. I was pregnant. I hemorrhaged while I was there. I almost lost my son.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't listen that I was in severe drug withdrawal.
Hey, but you could send them the podcast now and they can listen.
Yeah, that's
to the
very
whole
true.
Thing.
Yes.
I know this. Yeah, there's some that my doctor who drugged me for all those years, she left the country. So, yeah, of course she did. Yeah, as soon as I said I was going to sue her, she was in 30 days gone out of the country. But there's another one that I went to just to kind of say, hey, I think it's the drugs. And he said, oh no, you can double the amount of Ativan you're on. So I am at some point going to send something to him, even though it's all these years. But when I called him, he's like, oh yeah, no, benzos are bad now. And you know what else is bad?
Yeah.
After you wake up out of the drug induced coma, you know, is there anything
else? A person that you try to educate on benzos and how bad they are, and they tell you, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
I don't understand the resistance.
That's what triggers me. That's what gives me the anxiety is you may go through what I went through.
Right.
And it's because you don't want to hear it.
Right. Yeah. I'll never get it. We go up against some of these doctors here in Boston from Mass General and Tufts and you know, some of them teaching at Harvard, and they don't want to hear it. They don't even stay and listen to the people that have come to tell their stories. It's very sad.
Hopefully, Geraldine, I can change medicine. I mean, it may only be one person, but maybe I can change it for just the people I care for. I hope that that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that that's my purpose.
Right. Is there anything you feel you need to forgive yourself for? Because I know I don't. An innocent victim.
No, I believe that I was completely victimized.
Yeah. Okay.
And I believe that if I didn't have the education I even did back then, that I may not have survived.
Right. Right. Anything else, Beth, that you'd like to tell us? Because I know a lot of people would say, oh, how can I reach her? You are in school, you're working full time, a wife, a mother. This is why we're doing it. We're trying to think of every question or anything somebody has asked you. If you want to bring it up, I want to get everything in just because you need to have your life. And I'm thankful again that you agreed to do this.
So all I would say is I am apologetic that I can't help everybody, but I missed so many years of my life that I have so much catching up to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so busy now that I can't. But just know that you will heal and that you need to find something so deep within yourself that you love more than yourself to hold on for.
Right.
And that you can and will heal, and it will be okay. And, you know, if they have any questions after listening to this and they want to relay them to you and you want to relay them to me, I have no problem with that.
Okay.
At all. I think that would be a good kind of middle person.
Yep.
But
in fact, one question somebody might want to ask, so is that you'd use the, if somebody said, well, you know, modified surfactant. In fact, you taught me something about it. For those that can't do bone broth, because they, you know, it's high in glutamates or whatever, that this is supposed to be better. Mm-hmm. But you do the eugenics pectisol. So if somebody's asking about that, and you can go search, do your own research, you know, get whatever brands you want.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I still, to this day, and I think you and I talked about this, I still can't do bone broth.
Yeah. No,
it's
which
so
is
high
surprising.
In glutamate, I can't do it. It will give me what I call an attack for probably 2 to 3 days.
Wow. Yeah. There's a lot that cannot do the bone broth. So I think that's, you know, good information to have. So on an ending note here, anything you want to say to everybody?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah. I think you really covered it, and you have given people such great hope. So we just don't want anybody to ever, ever give up hope.
No, please don't. Don't, you know, in closing, I'll say, don't let the doctors win.
Right. Right. Very good. So thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Garrett, we just finished the podcast with Beth. And I remember I called you from Florida and said, as soon as I get home, we have to do this podcast because this was important, because so many people feel that they're never going to recover. And her story, you know, had me in tears. We had to pause for a minute there while we were interviewing her. How did you feel it went?
Well, and you know, I always think that my opinion is, you know, although, you know, I've seen you go through it and I'm involved with it a little bit with the legislation and everything, I always feel like I'm kind of like viewing things from the outside. So I feel like her story is, it's similar in a lot of ways to some people where it's like, God, you can't imagine that this person ever got better, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she does. So, you know, it's a hopeful story.
Right. But for you, because you're a grown man now, mm-hmm. but you were a young boy when I was going through it. And I think that's what teared me up when I asked her that right. question. That's when I started to cry. And it still bothers me.
We talked about As Prescribed in the last, you know, post-show talk. They asked me a lot about, like, when we were doing our interviews, and maybe you see a couple of minutes of interviews with me in the As Prescribed. But they asked me a lot about, like, my childhood and things like that that never made it in.
Yeah.
And
what did you say, seeing how I don't get to see that footage?
Yeah, I don't know if I have, like, a different experience than other people, because people have come on this podcast and talked about, like, you know, losing their families or, you know, mothers and fathers and said, like, their sons and daughters don't want to speak to them anymore. But for me, maybe because it was the age, or maybe I was just, like, such a knucklehead of a kid that, I just never paid attention too much. I just figured, like, this is what life is like. Like, mom is always in the house, and dad has to do everything, and that's what everybody's life is like, right?
And now it's the opposite.
And now it's the opposite, yeah.
But I think for her, for Beth, her son is younger. He's not going to remember. We've had plenty that their kids were too young and don't remember. But what she went through, I mean, to be pregnant and off the drugs cold turkey and to go your pregnancy, I mean, it's horrific, and that no one in the medical field even recognizes what she's going through is a disgrace, which is what we have been trying to work on for years. And as she becomes a nurse practitioner and learns functional medicine, I hope she's out there teaching, and it just has to stop. Nobody else should suffer like she did, or the hundreds and thousands of others that are out there suffering like that.
Yeah, it's I always think, listening to these interviews, like, the most frustrating thing is hearing how many doctors people have to go to before they just, like, by miracle find somebody that's able to help them. Because, you know, I've had health issues before, and it's frustrating when you go to somebody and they're like, no, there's nothing wrong with you, and then you're like, well, I'll just be sick forever, I guess, like, if nobody right. can figure this out.
Right, but nobody helped her as she's sick in it. She's got to walk away, like I walked away. And then, like me, she finds a functional medicine doctor, you know, that helps the body to heal. Some of us are just going to get better, and some need help. And so it is quite the story, and I'm so appreciative, because it's hard for her to do this. And I had so many more questions to ask her, and I'm trying to look at them, like, which are the most important, because I knew that, you know, they were going out. And yeah, it's emotional to hear the suffering,
yeah,
and all that she went through.
But, you know, like I said, the hopeful part is things are definitely getting better.
And, oh, she's healthy.
Yeah.
You know, friends are lost, and, you know, there's no guilt on her part. You know, it was done to her, and just like it was done to everybody else. There's nothing she should feel sorry for. And I'm sure her husband and son are very grateful she lived through it and became healthy again. So her whole goal now is school and her family. And, again, very appreciative of
her. Yeah, and that the word gratitude there makes sense, too. I think I notice it in you sometimes that, like, when we're doing things that, you know, I probably couldn't have imagined us ever doing as a family, like even just going out to dinner, like there's always, like, the moment they're like, well, this is something that I never could have imagined that we were ever going to do together. And it's
right. I never left the house.
You're grateful for it, right?
Oh, the little things. You really do become very grateful for what you can do. It, like she said, she's a whole better, different person. You know, we appreciate different things. You just take nothing for granted.
Or even things smaller than that, like just being able to do things on a whim on a daily basis. Like if we had to go shopping somewhere or something, you never could have done that.
Oh.
It would have been weeks of thinking about having to go to, like, a place that you've never been before to go shop for a dress or something like that.
Oh, never happened.
Now you could go do that, no problem.
Just take myself and go.
Right.
I don't need a chaperone. I don't know if you remember one time we were at the mall and you went to go down the escalator and my brain, you know, just wouldn't even let me do it. And I stood at the top and you had to turn around and run up to get me.
Yes.
And I'm like, I can't, you know, the panicking, like the your kids have to see this. So luckily for Beth, her son isn't going to remember a lot of that. And he felt nothing but love from her. And even though we're sick, I think we still know how to give love. We're suffering and we're sick. And I like that she, you know, her and I both, you know, we would do anything to help people. I have seen over the years the toll it takes on me, you know, because you hate seeing people suffer, but we have to get on with our lives at some point, and I'm glad she did this so that we're leaving her story out there for people.
Yeah. I don't know. We've talked a lot about that, I guess, before, like kind of you leaving everything behind. And the podcast is almost part of that, right? Because it's we're trying to do everything all in one shot rather than talk to everybody kind of piecemeal, like doing, you know, 10 phone calls a day with people that are sick. Right.
It's like, go listen to the podcast.
You know, I think unfortunately until, you know, there's more change in America, there's almost going to be like this pass the baton kind of thing where people need to, some people are going to need to move on with their lives, but you have to pass the baton to somebody else that needs to help the next person behind them and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I can remember Val Stevens, who started the Bristol Tranquilizer Group over in the UK. She had retired, and then I needed to talk to her at one time. So they're like, oh, it's Geraldine Burns is calling from the United States. So they gave me her number, and I called her. I said, hey, Val, it's Geraldine. And she's like, hi, and we're talking. I said, I needed to ask you this. She said, well, let me just stop you right there. She said, I'm retired. I will never talk about Benzes again.
Wow.
Ever. She said, if you want to come here, I run a bed and breakfast now. You're welcome. She said, everybody said I look 20 years younger. I will never discuss it again. She gave a lot of her years. So
good for her for drawing the line. This line of the same, like she knew. Like that.
She knew. What she needed. She knew. And I needed her to be, because even the toughest cases would go to Val so she could help them. And it was, she drew that line. And I thought, wow, I gotta do that someday. And I think doing the podcast, we do that. We're trying to bring the best success, hopeful stories to people.
Yeah.
All right. Well, another wonderful, important podcast. And thank you for always coming and doing it, because we all know I'm not tech savvy at all. Thank you.